Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this pre-recorded program. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 1st, 2020. Suspected cattle raiders kill 9 civilians and 2 officers from members of the organized forces in Ural County.
One of the morning, the cattle were released for grazing. Then the UDUs came and took the cattle and they went away. They were the youth from this side, Yero side. They went and tried to block them. This is where the fighting took place, and 9 people got killed.
And the UN mission in South Sudan says 57 members of its staff tested positive for COVID-19.
About 45 of those have recovered, and very sadly, one person has died.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan, Alan Nedo, has condemned the killing of an aid worker in Tribet County of Lake States and called on authorities and communities to ensure the safety and the security of humanitarian personnel in the country. The UN says on June 28, a clearly marked ambulance transporting an injured person to a hospital following an intercommunal violence was shot in Tribet, killing the driver who worked for an international NGO. The humanitarian coordinator says these violence acts against humanitarian workers are, quote, outrageous and unacceptable, especially during a time when health workers are taking risks to assist South Sudanese who are affected by COVID-19, preventable diseases, and injured in related armed violence. The top UN diplomat says aid workers need safe and secure environment in South Sudan. This is the 5th incident involving the killing of an aid worker in South Sudan this year. 128 workers were killed in South Sudan since 2013. Still in Lake State, authorities in Rumbek say suspected cattle raiders killed 9 civilians and 2 members of the organized forces in Ural County. The spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces confirmed the attack and says 2 senior officers from the army and the police were killed during the clashes with raiders at Luak Luak Payam over the weekend. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor reports from Rumbek.
Barnaba Mayording, Secretary General of now defunct Eastern Lake State, says violence started when armed youths suspected of being from Poloch and Luel Payams of Rumbek East County raided 100 subcattle from the Nyarwa cattle camps in Aluak Luak Payam of Yarul West County on Sunday night. He says one army major and a police officer were killed.
One of the morning, the cattle were released for grazing. Then the UDUs came and took the cattle and they went away. They were the youth from this side, Yero side. They went and tried to block them. This is where the fighting took place, and 9 people got killed.
Civilians in Luak Luak who spoke to South Sudan in Focus on the condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals from the security forces says the raiders ambushed and killed 20 soldiers who were traveling in a Land Cruiser pickup truck as they tried to pursue the raiders and rescue the stolen cattle. Army spokesman Major General Lul Roy Kong says he heard about the clashes in the area, but denies 20 soldiers were killed in the incident.
There was an attack at the cattle camp in Luak Luak, Rumbek East County, and our forces that were deployed in the area responded by trying to stop the carnage from going on. This force was involved in recovery efforts to recover the stolen livestock. Unfortunately, in the process, we ended up losing two servicemen. One at the rank of major from SSPDF, and a second, an NCO at the rank of sergeant from CID.
Former Eastern Lake State Secretary General Barnaba Mayor Deng says after the cattle raid, he contacted officials in the now defunct Western Lake State, and the two sides agreed to work together to try to put to an end to deadly cattle raids in the area.
The operation only is based on information sharing. When we just learned that these youth are maybe moving towards other areas where the cattle are grazing, we can inform ourselves. We can inform ourselves so that we can inform the cattle camp there. That is the only way we can do until the guns are moved in the hand of civilians later. So we are just using only information sharing. When we learn that the movement of these criminals, we can inform ourselves that there are these youth who are in the bushes. Please, we can take care of the cattle.
Kong agrees that there is a direct correlation between the number of cattle raids in the area and guns owned by the civilians. Kong says the government will carry out the civilian disarmament campaign in Warap and Lake State.
The presence of arms in the hands of people who are not authorized to carry them is a danger to all of us. First and foremost, it's a danger to civilians themselves because they keep on killing themselves, they keep on raiding themselves. Also, it also poses a big threat to us. Each time we are trying to intervene, each time we are trying to enforce law and order, we become victims of this madness. And the reaction, the best reaction is for us to do disarmament.
Cattle rustling and revenge killings have been common in several parts of the country for the past 15 years, killing hundreds and possibly even thousands of people. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur in Rumbek, Lake State.
The special representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan says nearly 60 personnel of the United Nations mission in South Sudan have tested positive for COVID-19. David Sayre says the UN staff could have contracted the virus due to what he calls continuous close interaction with the South Sudanese people. For VOA News, Lasuba Memo reports from Juba.
David Shearer tells South Sudan in Focus the 57 unmissed COVID-19 cases include the military, police and civilian personnel, majority of whom are Juba-based. Shearer says positive cases among unmissed peacekeepers and personnel are being reflected in the country's overall data. He says only one of the 57 unmissed workers who tested positive died from COVID-19 this month.
About 45 of those have recovered and very sadly, one person has died. I mean, it's across both the military, the police, and civilian staff members. And really, it reflects the fact that, you know, our people are working very closely with the South Sudanese and moving around and talking to them and meeting them, etc. So we, in some ways, it's not to be... It's not surprising that we have that number and possibly even more as time goes on.
The first known COVID-19 case in South Sudan was a UN civilian employee who traveled to the country from the Netherlands in February. She had not presented any symptoms until several weeks later. The second and third cases were a UN driver and a Tuareg-based UN employee, both of whom were linked to the first case. Both individuals were later discharged in April after recovering from the virus. Dozens of peacekeepers, including some in the mission's police unit, have tested positive, which Shearer says is linked to the South Sudanese people.
Well, nearly all of it has come from the South Sudanese population because we've had very little influx of people coming into the country, and anybody that does come into the country has to be quarantined for 14 days. So we're pretty confident that we are not bringing the virus in from outside. And our forces, the companies and the battalions that we have here haven't rotated since back in late February, so they wouldn't have brought it in. Almost certainly coming from the community spread that's prevalent in South Sudan.
Shearer says UNMISS is taking extra precautions to ensure that troops and other personnel are not shaken by the number of positive cases. The UNMISS chief says the virus may have spread quickly among the internally displaced persons or IDPs sheltering at crowded UN camps in the country.
Given that the POC sites are pretty congested, it means that there's a greater possibility, perhaps, of people contracting it. Although we have put in a lot of education about the spread of coronavirus and also additional water, soap, things like that, so that people can take the proper precautions. Nevertheless, it's likely that it's taken hold inside of the POC site.
Shearer says despite COVID-19, UNMISS continues to discharge its mandate normally and respond to security needs of the affected population. He says any UNMISS worker who tests positive for the virus is immediately isolated and their job is covered by other staff members. As of Tuesday, South Sudan registered a total of 2,007 COVID-19 positive cases, 261 recoveries and 38 deaths. For VOA News, I am Nasuba Memo in Juba.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, will open 44th regular sessions of the Human Rights Council with an oral update on global human rights developments and on the human implications of COVID-19 on human rights. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The Human Rights Chief says the COVID-19 pandemic has significantly changed the global human rights landscape and profoundly deepened existing inequalities around the world. Michelle Bachelet cites racial and ethnic minorities and indigenous peoples as among those most victimized by the spread of the deadly ailment. Bachelet added, this is particularly true of people of African descent, whom she says continue to face discrimination and unequal opportunities in many spheres, including education and employment. Bachelet expresses dismay at reports of increasing stigmatization, discrimination, and hate speech against minorities and migrants in countries such as Sri Lanka, India, Bulgaria, Haiti, Iraq, and Pakistan. She calls for urgent action to end unjust and violent actions by law enforcement personnel and for an end to the systemic racial discrimination seen in many nations.
Discrimination kills. Depriving people of their social and economic rights kills. And this death and harms damage all of society. COVID-19 is like a heat-seeking device that exposes and is fueled by systemic failures to uphold human rights. Without rapid and decisive national and international action, the pandemic will put an end to hopes to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030.
Bachelet criticizes some countries, including Russia, China, and Egypt, for using COVID-19 as an excuse to crack down on journalists and on freedom of speech and assembly. She warns the pandemic is deepening local and regional threats to peace. Bachelet also notes the human rights and humanitarian situation in war-torn Yemen and Syria is worsening as the respiratory ailment takes root.
I'm also concerned that the current grave human rights situation in the Sahel region may further deteriorate as the impact of COVID-19 increases people's suffering, poverty, and grievances. Already armed extremist groups are strengthening their influence over local communities in central and northern Mali, northern Burkina Faso, and parts of the Lake Chad Basin. In South Sudan, COVID-19 could further heighten the extreme vulnerability of its population.
The World Health Organization says more than 10 million people globally have been infected with the coronavirus, and more than 500,000 others have died. The agency warns the worst is yet to come, and says the only way to defeat the pandemic is for nations to work in solidarity. High Commissioner Bachelet agrees. She says nations must work together for the good of all. She warns any lack of international cooperation and any effort to prioritize profit for personal or political gain over public health will ensure continued spread of the epidemic, hindering economic recovery. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese are back on the streets, demanding for justice, freedom, and democracy. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the funniest thing to ever happen to you?
I was thinking I can cross a gutter. Unfortunately, I found myself in the gutter and everybody was laughing.
The funniest thing to ever happen to me was when I fell down in the marketplace and people were laughing. It became funny to me because I just slipped.
A lot has happened to me, but what I remember, being with my family, discussing, they get to tell me funny stories that make me happy.
The funniest thing that has ever happened to me is moving from the house, picking a vehicle, realizing I don't have money on me. How embarrassing to realize there's nothing on me, just moving out like that.
I tried to like ask somebody for money and I tried to like fix something and it didn't work. Well, I was ashamed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linar Mudu. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Sudanese are calling on Sudan's transitional government to build a democratic society in Sudan. Thousands of Sudanese marched on the streets of Khartoum and other cities Tuesday to commemorate June 30th, the day ousted President Omar al-Bashir staged a coup in 1989. The protesters are demanding for justice, freedom, and economic reforms in the country. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Hundreds of members of residential resistance committees at Jebel Aulia in Khartoum chanted pro-democracy slogans, reciting poems and sang revolutionary songs. Some waved Sudanese flags or carried banners saying, "Civilian rule is our ultimate goal," while others set tires on fire. Speaking in Arabic, Sudanese protester Merghani Al-Hamdan says more than a year after Omar al-Bashir was ousted from power, the transitional government has done little to implement reforms on justice and freedom as promised.
We are even doubting this government, and what we are saying is that they are sympathizing with the previous regime because it's unfair to spend one full year. They are unable to try the perpetrators. They have been in detention for more than 1 year. If they are not able to try them in the court of law, they should hand them over to the International Criminal Court.
Speaking in Arabic, protester Musa Abdul Samad says a legislative council should be established immediately so that they are able to play their constitutional role and hold cabinet members accountable for their deeds.
We wanted them to be established so that they can hold ministers accountable. We have some ministers who have failed to carry out their duties, but there is no entity that questions them.
Al-Tayb Bakuri, a member of Jebel Aulia Resistance Committee, says the Sudanese people want to see the military caretaker governors removed from their positions and replaced with civilian governors. Speaking in Arabic, Bakuri says the nation's military rulers are part of the old guard who do not represent the Sudanese people.
The military governors are actually part of the previous administration and they don't have a development plan for the respective states. They are caretakers and they cannot initiate any program for the future of the citizens or to support a joint effort national policy. They are not knowledgeable with the details of the political agenda.
Speaking by phone from Al-Fashir in northern Darfur state, where thousands of citizens also merge in the streets, protester Fatima Daoud says Sudanese families have yet to witness economic reforms, including measures to regulate prices of basic commodities. Speaking in Arabic, she says food prices have skyrocketed in recent months.
We have to say the truth. Up to now, we are still unable to get buses. We are still queuing for bread, and there are people who are benefiting from this situation. And we are not seeing anyone being held accountable for this act.
Sudanese Information Minister and Government Spokesperson Faisal Muhammad Saleh commended the revolutionaries for their peaceful marches demanding change. Speaking in Arabic, Saleh says, although the demonstrations were by and large peaceful, at least one was killed yesterday.
But we have confirmed one martyr lost his life in Omdurman, and dozens of wounded have also been recorded in Khartoum and other states. We want to assure our people that our judiciary shall carry out a transparent investigation to hold accountable those responsible for this unacceptable act.
In a nationwide televised address Sunday night, Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok said the protesters' demands for change were legitimate and he vowed to fulfill those demands in the best way possible in the coming 2 weeks. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Dozens of Sudanese living in the United States rallied outside the Sudanese embassy in Washington Tuesday to hand a petition to Sudan's charge d'affaires, Amira Agarib. The crowd chanted demands for justice, peace, and democratic transition in Sudan. The protesters also demanded for removal of embassy staff appointed by ousted President Omar al-Bashir. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Al-Bashir to ICC!
Al-Bashir to ICC! Protesters chanted Al-Bashir to ICC, Al-Bashir to ICC, and justice, justice for Sudan, justice, justice for Darfur outside the Sudan embassy in Washington, D.C. yesterday. 29-year-old Sudanese student Rababa Naim says she came from Baltimore to the D.C. rally to stand in solidarity with Sudanese back home.
I'm here to echo the voice of the Sudanese people in Sudan, as the Sudanese in diaspora, mainly as a response to the call for protest in June 30th, mainly by resistance committee and families of martyrs. Our main demands are, to begin with, peace. We want peace, we want justice, transitional justice, we want economical reform.
49-year-old Ihab Abbas Said is a music producer and architect who has been documenting the Sudan revolution through photography here in the U.S. and back home. Said says he showed up to the rally to support the transitional government in Sudan, but also to urge Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok to fulfill the aspirations of the revolution.
We don't want to overthrow the government. We love this government. That's me personally. But we just want to correct the path and to speed up the process. And pretty much this is what all the revolution in Sudan, what happened now in all the different cities, this was their main demand. Speed up the process. We want to see results.
Said says Sudanese Americans also want to see the current embassy staff fired, who he says are known for harassing Sudanese Americans.
Clean up the embassy, because before the embassy was a beehive of all the Kazan, we call them, the previous regime. Now they want to clean it up and also to open the doors for all the citizens, the Sudanese citizens here living in the States, to welcome them. Before the revolution, there was no connection between the Sudanese American living here and the embassy. It was total segregation. Now they want to rebuild.
57-year-old Usama Khalifallah Mustafa, one of the organizers of yesterday's rally, says, in the past, his staff at the Sudan embassy in Washington acted as security agents for Bashir's administration.
The embassy still has local staff that is, they did harass our citizens in here, and they did make them some uncomfortable, and they passed the information. They work as agent for the regime of Omar al-Bashir, and they have made a lot of people so uncomfortable in here and back in Sudan when they arrived to the airport.
Mustafa says Sudanese diaspora who did not support Bashir usually face harassment and arrest whenever they return to Sudan as a result of intelligence given to Sudanese authorities by the Sudan embassy in D.C. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
The May 25th killing of George Floyd, while in the hands of police, sparked an outpouring of protest demonstrations against racism and police brutality throughout the United States. Some African immigrants say they experienced discrimination based on ethnic group or religion in their home countries, but not prejudice based on their skin color alone, as African Americans do. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with several Africans about what it means to them to be black African living in the United States.
Amini Kujunju directs a small nonprofit foundation in New York City.
When she first arrived in the U.S. from the Democratic Republic of the Congo 20 years ago, she hadn't experienced color-based racism, but now she has. She says African Americans and African immigrants in the U.S. face different options. Many Africans can go back home. African Americans are here to stay.
The common denominator is that if you're black in this country, you're going to face racism, prejudice, and you're going to have to work very hard to put them aside in order to just forge forward.
Sudan-born social worker Huda Ibrahim speaks of everyday microaggressions black Americans must contend with from white Americans.
Microaggressions are an everyday racist practice that we face as Africans, as black people, as people of color in this country, about basically who we are, whether it's in the classroom, workplace, public transportation, whether you're just at a park trying to enjoy your day. These practices, they happen so much. Questioning things that I achieved in life and did I get any help or did I deserve these things that I have? And I think if you're not careful enough, it causes a lot of insecurities, just feeling out of place constantly.
Before he became a grants and finance manager at a nonprofit institute, Tanzania-born Nathan Chiumi worked on Wall Street. He says that pay raises and promotions were often given to lesser qualified whites instead.
Obviously, that really didn't sit well with me, and it was definitely a race thing. And most of the time, it's very hard for us to confront it head on. So a lot of time, you just persevere and you endure it. But it doesn't mean that it makes you happy. Quite frustrating experience to live through.
But being black can put one's life, not just one's livelihood, in danger. Chiumi recalls the fear he felt in his apartment complex in the southern state of Florida, where a so-called Stand Your Ground law allows citizens to use lethal force against anyone they perceive to be a threat.
And so you're always afraid, what if one day I come into my house and I'm confronted by a neighbor who is a racist? They could just, you know, kill you right there, and that's going to be the end of you. These are all things that I had to really learn and adjust as a black person living in America.
Chiumi says he's also fearful of police violence.
And it doesn't matter whether I'm a decent human being. It doesn't matter that I have no history of crime. It doesn't matter that I'm, you know, well-educated. As long as you encounter bad police who can act irrationally, just take away your life. It's always hard to talk about this, really hard to even think about these things, because they just bring a lot of emotional rage.
Even so, he says, African immigrants feel divided in their attitudes towards the United States overall.
In one way, we admire the American dream, but on the other hand, we know our life can be taken away from us at any moment. We walk in a life which is full of optimism, but at the same time, you're scared for yourself and for your loved ones and for the children that you have to raise.
Davina Borotara, a Kenyan social worker living in New Jersey, has been heartened by the wave of demonstrations and the mainstream reckoning over racial justice they have led to. Still, she worries.
Will all this energy and all this protest really amount to actual change? Will people really be able to walk freely, live freely as equal Americans or citizens in this country? Will the change actually occur, and will we see it and experience it?
Those continue to be open questions. However, for now at least, the reality of racism and the pain and anger it engenders is laid bare for all Americans to see. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with a traditional Rababa song from the Blue Nile State in Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.